behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown. Touchdown.
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
I like the job, Bobby. Fires left side. Get a man there. Stevie Keck. Touchdown.
Really, we still got action.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Inside the 10. 5-yard line. Touchdown. C.J. Spiller.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO. Tonight, joining Murph in studio is Bills general manager Buddy Nix, Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News, and Josh Norris from Roto World. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium.
Touchdown, Buffalo. Leotis McKelvin brings it all the way back.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go. Yeah, we still got a lot of action tonight. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show for Monday, April 29th. And thanks very much for listening. A lot of action, a lot going on here at One Bills Drive today. And even going back to, obviously, last Thursday, day one of the NFL draft. We're here to talk about it for the next 2 hours. No interruptions, no preemptions, no silly podcasts to take advantage or to take precedence over real live radio. That's what we're all about now. And we want you to join us as well. A little bit of a jolt of excitement through One Bills Drive over the last just a little bit under a week with the draft and the addition of 16 college free agents and a trade today. And we want to talk to you about all of that tonight. You heard the rundown. What you didn't hear, Jerry Hughes is going to be joining us in just about 7 or 8 minutes or so. The brand new outside linebacker signed to a contract, traded actually, I should say, from the Colts to the Bills. Jerry Hughes coming in the trade for Calvin Shepard. He'll be with us moments from now. Buddy Nix in studio, the Bills general manager, to talk about the trade for Jerry Hughes, to talk about how all of these linebackers fit into the Buffalo Bills' new defense, and to talk about the draft, reviewing the draft. Buddy's going to be with us about 7:25 tonight. 8 o'clock, a review of the draft with our friend Josh Norris from RotoWorld.com. He writes for them and for NFL.com. Josh Norris with his wrap-up thoughts on the weekend of the NFL draft. And then Manish Mehta of New York Daily News, who covers the Jets for the New York Daily News. Man, things are just nuts down there, aren't they? Geno Smith gets picked last Friday night, and then they released Tim Tebow today. Where are the Jets going? We'll ask Manish Mehta about that at 8:20 tonight. But as always, we want to involve you, Bills fan, NFL fan. We want you to give us a call, and the phone lines, as usual, are open, 803-0550, the number. Toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. You can email the show at johnmurphyshow@bills.nfl.com. But here's what we'd like to know, and you can talk about whatever you'd like, but here's what I'm thinking. It's been a whirlwind less than a week for the Bills, really. A whirlwind 5 days, going back to day one of the NFL draft last Thursday. 5 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, for this franchise. I mean, the reshaping of the franchise really took some important steps over these last 5 days. Starting with Thursday night, first round, the Bills sitting there with the 8th overall pick, and they trade down, pick up the extra draft picks, an extra one in the second, and of course, they got that 7th round pick as well. The trade down on Friday, the selection of E.J. Manuel, or rather on Thursday, and the selection of E.J. Manuel on Thursday. Friday, rounds 2 and 3 with the receiver, linebacker receiver. Saturday, rounds 4 through 7 in the end of the draft. Today, 16 college free agents signed. Today, the trade for Jerry Hughes. Calvin Shepard goes to the Colts for Jerry Hughes. What we want to know from you, we want you to ring us up and let us know. What was the Bills' best move over these last 5 days? What gets you most excited about the Bills over these last 5 days? What move you think is the best move they made over the last 5 days? The drafting of E.J. Manuel, the acquisition of more draft picks in the trade down on Thursday night, the Robert Woods pick perhaps on Friday night, Kiko Alonso on Friday night, even Marquise Goodwin on Friday night, or maybe one of the draft picks on Saturday. Or was it today's trade, Calvin Shepard for Jerry Hughes? Or was it the 16 college free agent sign, including a couple notable names? What was the Bills' best move in the last 5 days? And conversely, what was the franchise's worst move over the last 5 days? Which of those moves would you disagree with? Which of those moves do you wish they had not done? Let us know what you think. The phone lines are open. 803-0550, the number toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can always tweet it in. Follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. What was the Bills' best move over the last 5 days since round one of the draft? And what was their worst move? What would you disagree with most? The phone line's open, 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to call. The moves kept coming today, and the big move today, the trade, the Bills acquiring linebacker Jerry Hughes from the Indianapolis Colts for Calvin Shepard. Jerry Hughes, a product of Texas Christian University, he was Indianapolis' first-round pick in 2010, 3 years ago, 31st overall. He has played in 40 games with the Colts, 7 starts in his 3 years there, 62 tackles, 5 sacks. He had 4 of those sacks last year. He got 6 starts last year. The Colts finally switched him up a little bit when Chuck Pagano came in and started playing a 3-4 defense, moved him outside to outside linebacker. So he played in all 16 games for the Colts last year, and he started 6 games and had a career-high 4 sacks, 1 pass defense, and a total of 46 tackles. Jerry Hughes, acquired from the Indianapolis Colts. We'll hear from him in just a moment. To get Jerry Hughes, the Bills sent Calvin Shepard to the Indianapolis Colts after a couple of years with the Buffalo Bills. Calvin Shepard, of course, a starter for the Bills last year at inside linebacker, and had a career year for him. 80 tackles, 2 sacks, 3rd-round pick in 2011. And Calvin Shepard goes to the Indianapolis Colts in exchange for 24-year-old Jerry Hughes. How rare is it that you get a player-for-player swap, a young player-for-young player swap? I think it's very rare. I think it's a trade that both teams made because of fit. Who fits in this Buffalo defense that Mike Patton's put together, and who's going to fit in the Indianapolis Colts defense that Chuck Pagano has in mind. But a very interesting trade. The Bills get Jerry Hughes from the Indianapolis Colts in exchange for Calvin Shepard. And that's one big move, and that trade came down earlier this afternoon. The Bills also announcing that they have agreed to terms with 16 undrafted college free agents. 16 players who were passed over in the draft are all expected to sign their contracts before the start of rookie minicamp a week from this Friday. And among the names, and some of these names leaked out over the weekend, a couple of interesting ones, including wide receiver Derek Rogers of Tennessee Tech, the former Tennessee Volunteer who had the issues off the field and had to transfer to Tennessee Tech, 4.5 speed, 39.5-inch vertical leap, 11-foot broad jump at the combine, led the SEC in receiving at Tennessee with 1,040 yards, so he had to finish at Tennessee Tech. This guy would have been a first or second rounder without the off-field issues. In fact, when I talked with Tom Roth, the Bills' college scout, last Tuesday, I believe, he compared him to Eric Moulds. Eric Moulds! And he was considered by many to be the best of the 3 Tennessee wide receivers, including Cordero Patterson and Justin Hunter. Derek Rogers is now a Buffalo Bill, signed as an undrafted free agent today. Also, quarterback Jeff Toole played at Washington State, good size, 6'3", 218 pounds, made 26 starts for the Cougars, passed for 5,900 yards, 33 touchdowns in his career, 61% completion. Good size, strong arm, according to the Bills scouts. Chris Brown talked with Brad Forsyth, the West Coast scout, today. Deceptively good athlete is what he is referred to. So there, that's Jeff Toole, who is now the 4th quarterback on the Buffalo Bills roster. The other signing today, we'll go through the names pretty quickly. They got offensive lineman Zach Chibane from Syracuse, who started 3 years at guard for Syracuse. They signed defensive end Izan Cross from Georgia Tech, a 3-year starter for Georgia Tech. They signed safety Jordan Dangerfield of Towson University, 2-time All-Colonial Association first-team pick. They signed cornerback Kip Edwards from Missouri, a 2-year starter for the Missouri Tigers. Fullback from Richmond, Kendall Gaskins, agreeing to terms with the Bills today. These are all rookie, undrafted free agents. They signed a wide receiver from Eastern Washington, Brandon Kaufman, good size, 6'5", 216 pounds. He set a football championship subdivision record, 1,800 receiving yards with 93 catches and 16 touchdowns in just 14 games last year. That's production. Brandon Kaufman out of Eastern Washington. They signed cornerback Vernon Kearney from Lane College, a cornerback who had 24 tackles for them. The Bills signed wide receiver Kevin Norrell They signed him to a contract. He comes from Stony Brook, a two-year starter there. 63 catches for Stony Brook last year. Also agreeing to terms with the Bills, linebacker Keith Poe, who played at Howard University, Defensive Player of the Year in the MEAC this past year, 71 career tackles for losses for Howard. They signed a cornerback from Southern California, who goes by the name of Roby Nickell, signed to a contract with the Buffalo Bills, 5'11", cornerback from USC. They signed a cornerback, Jamal Roll, from Catawba College, first-team All-South Atlantic Conference section selection. They signed running back, fullback from Albany, Drew Smith, the all-time leader for touchdowns scored at the University of Albany. They signed a defensive tackle from the University of California. His name is Aaron Tapodi. He is 6'2", 280 pounds, 18 starts over 4 years at Cal. And they signed an offensive lineman from the University of Pittsburgh today, whose name is Ryan Turnley, 6'6", 305-pounder, a two-year starter at center for the Pitt Panthers. 16 undrafted free agents signed by the Buffalo Bills today, including Derek Rogers, the wide receiver from Tennessee Tech. The Bills also released some players, quarterback Aaron Korp from Richmond, tackle Adam Grant, kicker Chris Kaplan, and tight end Joe Sawyer. A little bit of look around the NFL. Tim Tebow was released by the New York Jets today. We'll talk with Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News about that. And that's pretty much it when it comes to the draft. Let's hear from you about the Bills draft, about the trade today, about the 16 undrafted free agents signed today. What was the best move the Bills made in the last 5 days since last Thursday? What was their best move within the last 5 days? And what was their worst move? Which one do you disagree with most? Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-552-550. Let's take a call from Jason in Chicago. Hello, Jason. You're on the air.
How you doing, John?
Okay.
I'm going to say I've been following the Bills for over 25 years, and this is probably one of the first drafts I'm actually excited about because it seems like the Bills finally put players, regardless if they, you know, if they were had, you know, good backgrounds or bad backgrounds. So they just took players that were good players, and they finally took players that were designed around the scheme that they're trying to run. So they actually seem like they actually knew, you know, the players that they were drafting for, the schemes that they had on both offense and defense. And my feeling is if the quarterback manual and the linebacker and the wide receiver they took in the second round come along with this Derek Rogers, I would think that their draft's an A+. They could just get those four guys as starters on their team.
All right. Thanks for your call, Jason. Here is Frank in Cheektowaga. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Okay.
What I'd like to say is I think their best move was their first one. The straw that stirs the drink in the NFL is quarterback. And they went and got one, and nobody thought they were going to take him. And it proved that they're headed in the right direction. They didn't pick the obvious safe one, which would have been Nassib. And I think the reports that have been coming out on this selection have been better the more you hear about him. I mean, his ability on the scramble to complete better than 60% of his passes while he's scrambling. The fact that he runs only when he needs to run, and although he has that ability. And the other thing I'd like to mention is not what necessarily I think about the Bills draft, but the NFL Network that I've been watching had a poll of fans around the country, and they wanted to know who had the best draft in the AFC, and Buffalo won it with 48%.
Wow.
Wasn't close.
Yeah.
And that was on within the last hour or so.
Yeah, I did see that. You know what I think, Frank, and I thanks for your call, and I agree with much of what you said, but I'd like to walk it back a little further. You said the best move they made over the last 5 days was the first move. You referred to it, and that would be the selection of E.J. Manuel. I would submit that even before that, I would submit that they trade down the ability to get an extra pick in the second and to wind up with 8 picks as opposed to 6 picks was the best move the Bills made over the last 5 days. I think it shows an aggressive mindset opportunity to maneuver the draft board, which they really have not done a whole lot of in the Buddy Nix tenure now in his fourth draft. I mean, for first three years, Buddy was fairly content to sit there and let the board come to him, let the players come to him. That was an aggressive, bold move, some risk involved, not knowing if the Philadelphia Eagles would jump up and maybe want to grab E.J. Manuel, not knowing if someone else had E.J. Manuel high on their board and willing to sit for another eight picks. To get the quarterback there at 16 instead of 8. I think that was bold and aggressive, and I loved it. And it happened fairly early, just about an hour into the draft, and then they had to wait about one more hour before they finally did take E.J. Manuel's name off the board. To me, that was the best move the Bills made. But we're talking about that, the best move the Bills have made in the last 5 days, and maybe the worst move, the one you disagree with most. We'll get back to phone calls in a moment. One of the moves they made over the last few days was today's trade. Kelvin Shepard, third-round pick a couple of years ago, starter last year at middle linebacker for the Buffalo Bills, traded away, young guy, traded away, player for player, in a swap with the Indianapolis Colts. The Bills get outside linebacker Jerry Hughes in exchange for Kelvin Shepard. We had a chance to talk with Jerry Hughes today before he boarded a plane to come to Buffalo. Jerry Hughes is on the line with us, acquired in a trade with the Indianapolis Colts earlier today. Jerry, thank you very much. Congratulations on the trade, and you're on your way to Buffalo. Welcome to the Buffalo Bills, Jerry.
Thank you. I'm excited to get up there.
Did this hit you by surprise? Did you anticipate that there might be a trade in the works?
Yeah, it definitely kind of hit me by surprise. I mean, I had no window that I kind of just found out after we had finished up workouts earlier this afternoon.
And you know, you never know, I guess, when this sort of thing's gonna happen, but I mean, is it mentally jarring when you get that kind of news, when you're practicing, working out in one place one day and then on your way somewhere else later in the day?
Yeah, when you look at it like that, but you know, at the same time, you know, you're kind of just gonna see it as a new opportunity, you know, for you to go somewhere else and just gonna work hard and try to get on the field.
Yeah, I was thinking in your case, it almost is a chance after 3 years at Indy, a chance to restart your NFL career here in Buffalo, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I was just kind of looking forward to kind of taking this opportunity and just moving forward with it and just kind of go out there and just keep playing good football.
Hey, Jerry, I was looking at some of your background, and you grew up in Texas, and you went to TCU as basically a running back out of high school. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I did back in the old high school days, a little running back, kick return, and stuff like that.
And when did they start at TCU? When did they start working you in on the other side of the ball?
Kind of my freshman year when I kind of got there, I kind of knew something was up when I had the number 98 jersey in my locker.
Oh, really? Yeah, they didn't talk to you about it first, huh? They just make the jersey switch, and then
yeah,
it's on.
Yeah, they kind of just made that switch, and then when I kind of saw my name partnered up with all the rest of the defensive linemen, and then I kind of got the picture from there.
Bills had good success with a guy out of TCU, Aaron Schobel, who is one of the franchise all-time leaders in sacks. I don't know if you've ever met Schobel or his brother. They're kind of prominent TCU alum, but certainly you probably heard of him during your time there at Texas Christian, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of running to those guys my junior year. I think they came back for one of the games, and you know, being a TCU player, especially a defensive end, of course, you know, all the Schobel brothers, and of course, you know, and just of all the greatness he did at TCU and then for the Buffalo Bills as well.
Hey, Jerry, when you got drafted by the Colts first round a couple of years ago, did they, do you think, expect you to be like the next Dwight Freeney? I mean, was that kind of what they were looking at when they chose you, and did you feel like that was maybe what they anticipated?
You know, I wasn't quite sure what they kind of really wanted, to be honest. Just kind of got there from the first time being drafted there. They really didn't kind of give me a true identity to probably my second year there.
And it seems like this past year, in 2012, the Colts let you play kind of on the outside, on the edge, as a outside linebacker. Were you more comfortable at that position?
Right, yeah. When staff changing and Coach Pagano brought his system over, you know, it's just something that he kind of plugged me in at, and it just felt natural to kind of stand up and just kind of seeing things, using my hands and everything like that.
4 sacks for you last year, 41 tackles, your most productive season in the NFL. I would imagine that you're looking to sort of pick up where you left off when you get here with the Bills, huh?
Right, absolutely. You know, I've got an opportunity to kind of get on the field and kind of show my talents and everything like that. So, you know, definitely looking to continue with it, you know, and just do my best to contribute to the Bills and everything like that and just keep pulling in the wins because, you know, team success is always good.
You're probably as eager as anybody to find out exactly what role they have in mind for you here, and you probably haven't had a chance to talk too much to the coaches yet about that, right?
Right. You know, I'm excited for you, but, you know, I can't wait for the fight. You know, I've been checking already and just checking my watch to kind of see when that flight's going to come. So, yeah.
Well, have a safe flight, and we'll see you around the building the rest of the week, and thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight, Jerry.
All right, thanks for having me.
Jerry Hughes acquired in the trade for the Buffalo Bills today from the Indianapolis Colts in exchange for linebacker Kelvin Shepard. And he's on his way to Buffalo tonight. Plans on being here, I would think, for the voluntary offseason conditioning program that resumes here in One Bills Drive this week. So good to talk with him. We thank him for taking a couple of minutes as he made his way to the airport. Squeezing one more call in this segment. Paul in Toronto. Paul, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, John.
Hi.
John, I'm. This was, I think, a really good draft. This kind of reminded me of the old days of Polian. When you look back at those Shane Conlin, Jamie Muellers, and all those guys, I think this quarterback's going to bring a really fresh face to the Bills. I mean, you hear him talk; he's got a positive attitude. He's physically gifted. He played against big time competition in Florida State, and that was my concern with Nassib. If you look at the teams that he played against, against Syracuse, he played against some really poor competition and lost, or they were really close games. And this guy played against big-time competition in front of, you know, hostile crowds. So I don't think playing in Bill Stadium or any other stadium is really going to cause him much of a concern. And in regards to this linebacker, I'm not too sure how that's going to work out. They've given up a first-round pick. I think this is more of a salary dump on their half. You would think he's a pretty young guy. Why wouldn't they have kept him? He's only been in the league now for a few years. Those are my thoughts, John.
All right. Thanks, Paul. And the one thing, those are legitimate concerns. And obviously, if Jerry Hughes had lit it up with Indy, they would not be interested in trading him. That goes without saying. However, there is the question of fit. Kelvin Shepard, I think this coaching staff was having a hard time envisioning how he might fit in this Buffalo Bills defense. And I get the sense that even coming off his best year with Indy, that the Colts probably felt the same way. They used Jerry Hughes in one way on their defense last year, finally got him somewhat comfortable playing on the outside as sort of a 3-4 linebacker. But the Bills have a different sort of a defensive style that they're putting in place. In fact, we're going to ask Buddy Nix about it in just a minute, because this acquisition in particular and the drafting of Kiko Alonso Friday night, to me, are both fit acquisitions. They're trying to find specific types of players to fit specific roles in Mike Patton's defense. I believe that's what's going on. We'll ask Buddy Nix about that. Hey, we're got a trivia question coming up, too. We've got a E.J. Manuel signed baseball cap, new era baseball cap, signed by first-round draft pick E.J. Manuel. And later on this hour, we will be giving that away if you can answer a trivia question. Oh, we got a lot going on. If you're on the hold right now, stay there, because we'll get to your phone calls in a few minutes here. But we're going to have Buddy Nix in studio in a minute to talk about the acquisition of Jerry Hughes, to talk about the weekend and some of his thoughts on the end of the draft. So stick around for that. Buddy Nix, Bills GM, coming up next. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. The end of a busy week here, really, and a busy weekend with the NFL draft and some moves made today. Joining us in studio, the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, Buddy Nix. Thanks for coming by tonight, Buddy. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Murph.
The draft ends, and we think everything's going to quiet down, and you go out and make a lot of moves today. The trade for Jerry Hughes from the Colts. Tell us about him. What do you like about him?
You know, I scouted Jerry Hughes coming out of TCU, and so did all of our other scouts. I mean, we had good grades on him. We had first-round grades on him, and we liked Jerry. He Jerry played defensive end at TCU, but he was a guy that he was an undersized defensive end, but he was a, you know, his motor was running all the time. He chased all over the field and had ability, runs in the 4.6s and 255 pounds. And, you know, we saw him as an outside linebacker. And when he went and they played down at TCU, when he first went to the Colts, he played down for them. And then they stood him up some this year after Pagano got in there. But we think he'll fit what we do. We're excited about seeing he's actually, I guess if you want to say he's underachieved for a first rounder at Indianapolis, but we know what kind of, you know, he's a smart guy and he plays hard. So we want to give him an opportunity and try to put him in a place where he can excel.
Where does he fit in this defense? What position would he play?
Well, I think we're trying to get some versatility all over that defense, and we'd like to have a guy can play more than one spot. And we think Jerry can play rush end for us, and also get some playing time at Sam linebacker and in sub packages. Put his hand on the ground, let him rush the passer.
A couple of weeks ago when you had the voluntary veteran minicamp, I tried to keep track of where people were going on defense, and I couldn't. There's a lot going on there. I mean, it's hard to put a guy in a position, at least from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think he's very, you know, he's very versatile about where he plays guys. But I think his reputation has been that he puts them in a spot where they can do the best, where their ability fits.
After just 2 years here, did Calvin Shepard just not have a good fit in this defense? Is that what your thinking was?
Well, you know, I think that's part of it. You know, again, Calvin is a and this is really what we scouted him for. He's a true middle linebacker, a guy that's going to play from C-gap to C-gap, and he can do that downhill now. He can do that. But again, And Mike Pettine made this statement during the draft. The days of the Mike linebacker and the strong safeties have just about fell by the wayside. Everything's moved over. You know, you've taken the Mike now, and he's moved over. You've moved Will to Mike, and now you've walked up a Brian Scott as a nickel linebacker. Now he's the Will. So those guys got to be able to run and cover. And you know, we got Moats in there in the middle. He can play two spots. We got Alonzo Kiko is going to be in there. He can play two spots. Nigel Bradham can play Will or Mike. So that I think is kind of what we're coming to. And in the safety situation, you need a guy rather than a big, strong safety can come down in the box and play the run. You more need a guy that can walk up and play the slot.
It's so rare to see a player-for-player trade. It's almost refreshing in today's NFL.
You know, it used to be a lot of that, or it seemed like there was more of it back in the old days. But, you know, you got to give up something. We don't like to give up anything. We want to get it all, but that doesn't work that way. You have to give up something, and we don't like giving up draft picks, and this was probably the fairest deal we thought we could make.
Buddy, you also today signed 16 college free agents, undrafted free agents, including a couple of notable names. Derrick Rogers, the Tennessee Tech receiver, who, if he doesn't have the off-field stuff, that guy could have been, what, first, second rounder maybe, right?
That's what we had on him, and I think most people did. You know, he's being from Tennessee, I've known his background, and he's from Calhoun, Georgia. I knew when he was playing in high school, and the guy's got a tremendous talent. He's made some bad decisions, and it's gotten him in trouble, got him out of the University of Tennessee from an all-SEC performance his sophomore year, and he goes to Tennessee Tech and has a so-so year, kind of played down to the competition, really. But this guy's talented now. He can play, and you know, the ball's in his court. He goes by the rules and does like he's supposed to, or he go somewhere else.
Most people would be chastened by that experience to think that you've got first or second round talent and not to be drafted at all. I mean, I'm sure you're kind of banking on that some of that has to get his attention.
Yeah, I think he's humbled, and I think he's probably got a chip on his shoulder. But to tell you something about him, there was 14 teams after him after the draft. So We were 1 of 14.
And he chose here, I would think, for the opportunity that could be here, right?
Well, he did. I think there was a lot of reasons. One, his agent, Russ and J.O. are close to him, are been in, pretty close with him. Plus, he's got Robert Woods, and he had those guys. They worked out together. They knew each other. I think Derek felt comfortable coming here. Plus, he was one of our 30 visits. He sat in there in my office, and I told him how he'd be here and what we expected, and he could either, make a living playing football or get a job, So I think he understands that. Plus, he went to dinner with him. The guys did. Our coaches did, and he had a good visit. I think he liked it here.
The other undrafted free agent I want to ask you about, the quarterback from Washington State, Jeff Toole. Pretty good size, and certainly some people had him rated as a possible draft pick, right?
Yeah, and we brought him in, too. Mm-hmm. He was one of the 30, and we liked him. He's smart. We thought he had a good chance. He stayed hurt a lot in college and missed some time, but when he played, he was productive. So we think he's got a chance.
We're talking with Buddy Nix, the Bills general manager, the John Murphy Show presented by NUCO. I want to go back to last Thursday, Buddy, and you're sitting there with the eighth overall selection, and you make the deal with the Rams to drop down to 16. When did you start talking with St. Louis about that move?
I think it was Tuesday, before the draft on Thursday. And they approached and said, would you be willing to move down? Yeah, and we talked about, where they were and kind of what it would take point-wise to move up to us.
Did they make it clear that Tavon Austin was their target at that point?
No, not to me, okay. No. And I didn't ask them, but we all knew that that's probably who it was because it was rumored that the ninth pick was going to take Tavon if he had been there. So they thought if they could get to eight, they had him. And I think that was pretty clear. But we talked about the parameters a little bit, and we said we'll talk again at like round six or seven.
Do you use the trade value point chart? And because that worked out pretty much even between your two teams, even though it appeared, you got an extra second rounder out of it, but you also moved down eight spots.
Right,
Do you consult that? Do you use
that? Yeah. Yeah, Jim Overdorf's got it right in front of it. Russ has got it, so they tell me what would be fair. And then sometimes you don't go exactly by it, we're 10 points short, that won't do, so we don't we're not going to lose an opportunity to do something we want to do just because of that chart. But it gives you a guideline.
Did it matter to you at all, and maybe this is just in retrospect, that the Jets were a team interested in Tavon Austin and you kept him out of the division by making that trade?
Well, I'd say that was at least a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, were you tempted? This came up Thursday night, too, after the fact. Were you tempted to move down further? Did you get calls about moving down further?
Yeah, we did. And we had an opportunity, and yes, we were tempted. But, I don't like to push your luck too far. We kind of knew what we wanted to do, and you hear people now after the fact say, well, you could have moved back to the second and all that kind of stuff, and I know one thing. They don't know that for sure.
Right.
So neither did we. And there were some guys that thought they could get a quarterback in the second round. They thought we were going to take one. So if we'd have moved back to 30 or 29 or 31 or whatever, it'd been very easy to jump over us and take the guy.
I know you did your you wanted Manuel, you did your homework on him, but did you ever think at 16 or maybe even at 8 that you'd have a look at the entire class of quarterbacks? Were you surprised that you had your choice of quarterbacks at that point?
I tell you, a month ago I'd have said that wouldn't probably be the case, but as it got closer and by the time we got to Wednesday of the draft, I felt sure they'd all be there.
What was it that set E.J. Manuel apart when you went through your pretty exhaustive research on quarterbacks over the last 3.5 months?
I'd say it's about as exhaustive as you
can
get.
Yeah, have you ever done anything like that?
Yeah, we did that at San Diego? when we went to Eli and all that bunch.
Yeah.
And I think you have to do that, really. And because we learn something every time we talk to them. I mean, every time we went back and brought them in here, we learned something else about them. E.J., I think the best way to put this would be to ask you is what's not to like?
Right.
I hear all these folks rip him and say they got him in the third and they had him in the second. Most of those are guys that don't draft and they got nothing to do with the draft.
Yeah.
They don't work for a team, so they can put them anywhere they want to. But when you get people pinned down to what is lacking about this guy, it's pretty hard to talk about, I mean, or to come up with. I mean, there's always steps. He could step this way. Maybe his release is a little down or that kind of thing. But, you know, we got good coaches, and that's why we pay them good. They can correct that kind of stuff.
A couple of weeks ago, we had E.J. on the show here. And, matter of fact, I told you in the hallway, hey, we got E.J. Manuel on the show. You said, don't go pumping up him now. Now, I didn't know whether that meant we're not interested or don't push his name out there too far. You did a pretty good job of disguising your intentions there.
Well, we did the whole way, I think. And you know, Doug Marone took a lot of flack about not taking Nassib or us not taking Nassib. And, you know, Ryan, we liked Ryan. We liked Landry Jones. But that we said the same thing every time about these quarterbacks, and I made sure of that we all – we're on the same page and saying the same things. They all do a lot of good things. If you do the things they do best, if that's what you ask them to do, they're good enough to win with. And that's the way we left it on all of them.
Tell me about Robert Woods and what you saw of him. Was it Barkley's USC Pro Day or the individual workout?
Individual workout.
Okay.
Now, we were at his Pro Day, too, but at his individual workout, got to spend some time with Robert. And got to know him and what kind of kid he was. But, as a player, I think a thing in the reports and in the evaluation by the scouts, the thing that was mentioned every time is this guy is the most NFL-ready of any of these receivers because he's been in a great league, he's been well-coached, and he's ready to do that. So that was important to us.
How good does a kicker have to be picked in the sixth round?
He got to be real good.
Yeah, he must.
Yeah, he got to be real good. I will tell you this, and everybody says this to make themselves look better, but there was three teams called us that were picking him after us. We had him pegged in the sixth. We said he's going in the sixth. If we want him, we got to take him here. If we don't, we're not going to get him. And we were right. We got calls immediately after we picked him. That was our guy. That was who we were picking. So,
hey, buddy, this Buffalo Bills roster looks a lot different today than it did back on New Year's Eve, the day after last season ended. Is it better? Are you confident it's a better roster?
Absolutely. You know, we're younger. We're a young team. We got speed, and we got some versatility, and we brought some toughness to this team, I think. And not any reflection off the guys that were here, on the guys that were here, because they did a good job for us, but we needed to get better in some areas, and speed was one of them. And again, because of the way our defense is, we needed some guys that could play more than one spot. So I think we were able to do that.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Buddy Nix, Bills General Manager of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Couple of minutes left in this hour. We're going to play a little trivia next hour. Running out of time this hour. Our thanks to Buddy Nix for joining us. We put the question on the table for Bills fans tonight. What was the Bills' best move since the draft began last Thursday? Their worst move? Here's a call from Dennis in Maryland. Dennis, you're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing, John?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for coming on with us.
Basically, the way I feel is this. And you play football, you got to have a game plan. And you have to execute it. So I feel the best move that the Bills did was devise a game plan, and they executed it perfectly.
All right. I think you're right.
Hang up and I'll listen to you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, again, my best move for the Bills this past 5 days was the trade down. That's what I like the most about what they did over the last 5 days. The trade down that sort of set the tone for an aggressive, forward-looking draft strategy. I think it was a calculated risk that they took after all the due diligence they did on identifying their quarterback prospect. I love the fact that they traded down. CJ in Connecticut. Welcome, CJ. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing this evening?
Okay.
Now, let me say this. First things first. The best move, and I know you said one, but I'm going to go with two, but it's a two for one.
Okay.
First and foremost, E.J. Manuel, flat out, the guy is a raw great talent. Ever since March, I've been telling all my friends and everybody who I spoke to, the Buffalo Bills need to get this guy. I see the talent. The thing that bothered me on Friday, I heard the podcast. Guys were calling up saying it was a bad move this. Those guys don't know football. This guy has a high ceiling. Now, the second best move came part of the whole E.J. Manuel trade. The thing about that is that we were able to get two picks. Yeah. On top of getting E.J. Manuel. And you got to like that. You got to love that. That right there was the move right there of the draft for the Buffalo Bills. And then last but not least, in regards for today, getting Jerry Hughes is a great thing.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, C.J. We're going to take a break and come back for one more hour. We'll hear from Josh Norris of RotoWorld and NFL.com, an overview of the draft, and Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News on what's going on with the New York Jets. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's coming to the house. He's doing it again. My man. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Man, you should hang out. You should go fishing again.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
I don't know what we're yelling about.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family-owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Good to hear Van Miller's voice there on the open of the hour. Saw Van today, not a great occasion, but both Van and I were in attendance at Larry Feltzer's funeral mass in Williamsville today. A sad occasion, but it was good to see Van and his wife Gloria there, and always good to see Van. Always great to hear his voice. Great to have you in our listening audience tonight as we move on with hour two. We have some autographed E.J. We have one, anyway, autographed E.J. Manuel baseball cap, new era cap to give away this hour, so stick around for your chance to do that. Just a whirlwind 5 days for the Bills, and it started last Thursday night with round one of the draft and that trade down. To recap the draft from the national perspective, we go to our go-to guy when it comes to the NFL draft. He's the NFL draft writer for RotoWorld.com and a contributor to NFL.com on the draft. Josh Norris on the line with us. Josh, good evening. Did you get any sleep yet after the long weekend?
You know, I didn't even watch a game of football yesterday, which is about the first time since last July, so I'm happy to say that.
For entertainment value, I thought this year's draft, first round, especially from a Buffalo perspective, I thought it matched up as well as anything in the last couple of years. What did you think?
Wasn't it great? It really was entertaining, and every year, obviously, the draft is entertaining because teams can change for the next 5 to 15 years in just a three-day span, but I'm absolutely positive that it was likely really entertaining for you guys up in Buffalo.
It sure was. And let me say this, too, before we get into the nuts and bolts and the actual selections. The advent of the NFL Network in their draft coverage and going up against ESPN in their draft coverage, I think as football fans, as viewers, we are really served well. I mean, these two networks are going at it hard, trying to provide perspective and meaning to these picks, and I think they both do an outstanding job. What's your take on that, Josh?
I absolutely agree, and it's really even expanding from that. I mean, how crazy is it that they have highlights for all these players, some of them who I've never even heard of, and they had highlights for every single one. I mean, so much work is put into this, evaluations, research, some of the little tidbits and nuggets that they brought out. It is really great, and you're right. It only serves us as viewers in the end.
Hey, Josh, let's talk about the Bills, first of all. And one of your colleagues there at Roto World described Buffalo's draft overall as high risk, high reward. Do you agree with that?
You know, it's very interesting because I think they're going to do something that few NFL teams are doing, and that is speed, speed, speed. And we'll see exactly how that translates to the field. They've talked about certain different kinds of offenses and where the speed is the most critical factor. And obviously, you already have C.J. Spiller on the team, T.J. Graham on the team. But you add in a Marquise Goodwin, who is a international athlete in on the track and field realm, I guess you could say. And he's the fastest player in this draft class. And you add in an E.J. Manuel, who obviously has some scrambling and mobility and is still learning that aspect of his game. But you saw him have some great plays where he scrambled for a couple of yards. And don't forget about consistent threat and Stevie Johnson and Robert Woods now. I mean, neither one are going to blaze by you with great measurables, but they both are very consistent. And I think that makes that offense kind of well-rounded, in my opinion.
Josh, how surprised were you when the Bills drafted E.J. Manuel, first quarterback chosen last Thursday night?
Well, I'm not the only one that was shocked, to be perfectly honest. And we had no real idea of what was going to go on. You know, Jason Cole of Yahoo wrote a couple days beforehand that he talked to four general managers, and all four told him they were going to select a different quarterback, the Bills. And I thought it was, man, I was so oddly confident that it was going to be Ryan Nassib, just for how much we heard about his confidence and his demeanor. But, you know, looking back on it, we heard the exact same things about E.J. Manuel. There just wasn't enough talk about him being the first off the board. So I have no argument with it. Obviously, it's going to fit what they're going to do. I just hope he develops into that passer.
You know, the whole quarterback picture, you know, and it wasn't just you, but you were on the line with you right now. Nobody really had a good handle when it's all said and done on who was going to go where, on when these guys might go. I mean, people were talking about a month before the draft, people are talking about Geno Smith going, you know, top five pick in the draft, and he lasts until the second round, right? Or was that third round? Second round. And then, you know, by a week before the draft, Ryan Nassib supposedly was shooting up the charts and was going to be a first rounder, and he lasts until the fourth round, Barkley a fourth rounder. Why is it that no one had a good handle on what teams really thought of these quarterbacks?
Listen, I wasn't only wrong weeks leading up to the draft. I was wrong in between day one and day two, because I wrote a piece or made a little comment in an article I had in between those days that said there's going to be a huge run of quarterbacks on day two, and then only two get drafted.
Yeah.
You know, I actually think that when you get into that fourth round area on day three, that there were some great values, and especially in the seventh round. I mean, there were four quarterbacks selected in that fourth round, and then four more in the seventh round, nothing in between. Exactly what you said. We had no handle on which guys were going to go where, but at least we thought that a lot of them were second and third round talents and they would be drafted accordingly. It certainly didn't turn out that way. And I think part of it is because of the depth between, let's say, the 15th pick and the 100th selection, that teams probably had really high grades on these non-quarterback prospects. And so they took them, because you don't really put your quarterbacks on the same board as with other positions.
You know, having talked to Doug Marrone and Buddy Nix over the last few days, including today, I don't think they really care what draft experts think about their selection of E.J. Manuel, and I don't know that they should even give it a second thought, given the amount of time and effort that went into interviewing and testing and poking and prodding all of these quarterback prospects. I mean, I can't remember any time in recent times, anyway, that a team has done that much due diligence to identify one player, one quarterback, as the Bills did going into this draft.
Yeah, and you mentioned them not caring about what experts or analysts or whatever you want to call those people say, and I absolutely agree. I mean, there's a saying that if you listen to the fans, you'll be sitting with them. Yeah. So it's going to be true, and who knows if any of the quarterbacks are going to pan out, whether it be E.J. Manuel, who's the first one, whether it be my guy Zach Dysart, who was in the seventh round, you know, someone in between. Any of them could really pan out if progressing the right way and if given the opportunity. And I think Manuel might be in the lead just because it seems like he's going to be given an opportunity, maybe not right away, but sooner rather than later.
How do you explain the precipitous drop, I guess, in estimation of Matt Barkley? I mean, that was shocking, wasn't it, that he lasted until the fourth round?
And then it was also shocking that he went to the Eagles, a team that has been associated with a mobile quarterback, at least Chip Kelly. You know, I think with him, it's all about rhythm and timing. And, you know, he can be a good passer if he gets that 3-5-7-step drop, plants off the back foot, and hits that first or second read. And he does a lot of stuff pre-snap as well. But his biggest issue is making things happen after that first receiver is covered, or making things happen when he gets to look off second, third read and find some pocket to step up into and get him off his rhythm. And it's going to be interesting to see, because with Chip Kelly, at least at Oregon, he had a lot of quick hitting and accurate passes and just making the right decision early. And Matt Barkley can do that. So I'll be very interested to see what he does in the next 2 or 3 years with that team.
Hey, Josh, the Buffalo Bills made it through the draft without selecting an offensive lineman, but even with a perceived needed guard. And yet in the first round, there were two guards and a center chosen. Tell us about league-wide. What's going on with those interior offensive linemen?
You know, it's very interesting because four interior, or maybe even five if you count Justin Pugh with the Giants, were selected in the first round. And we talked about all the tackles beforehand, and I wasn't expecting Kyle Long to go in the first round. And I certainly wasn't expecting Travis Frederick to go in the first round. But it shows where the league is headed. Like I talked about, those three and five step drops are really turning into the normal offenses in the NFL, getting the ball in your playmakers' hands and letting them run with it after the catch. And so teams are switching that up and defending it and creating a lot more interior pressure. A-gap blitzes, looping edge rushers back inside, and obviously drafting defensive tackles that get upfield very quickly. And so you need guys to block him. And I think this might be kind of a new wave. And potentially down the road, the center position might be more important than that right tackle or left tackle position down the road.
Josh, do you get involved in grading drafts at this early juncture, a day or two after the draft wraps up?
To be perfectly honest, I stayed away from that this year. You know, grading is odd in that, to me, it's very tough to grade someone on what they did now when it's not based on your own perception heading into the draft. But there were some very interesting landing spots if you have any questions about any of them.
Well, yeah. Let me hear. What are your most interesting landing spots?
You know, I think Zach Stacy at the St. Louis Rams is very interesting. And he was selected in the sixth or the seventh round, I believe. And he's someone I've liked throughout the process. So it kind of goes back to your pre-draft rankings. But if given an opportunity, I'm not saying he's Alfred Morris, but if given the opportunity, I think he could make productive things happen with that number of carries. And it's uncertain backfield now without Steven Jackson. So I wouldn't be surprised if Zach Stacy really surprises me.
People be interested to know, Josh, that in RotoWorld, you've already looked ahead, believe it or not, to next year's draft, and you have a list of 35 names to keep an eye on for 2014, including Clemson quarterback Taj Boyd. Tell us about him.
Boyd is someone who took a bigger step than anyone between the 2011 and 2012 season. He lost about 15 pounds, and usually that doesn't show up very much, but with him it did because he was able to avoid so much pressure in the pocket, step up when he needs to, and fire downfield. Obviously, he had DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, and Andre Ellington, so those are nice pieces to have. But he, like I said, if he had come out this year, he might have been the top quarterback selected. I know we talked about him a long time ago, but Boyd, right now, I think he's the top senior quarterback ahead of name-brand guys like A.J. McCarron and Aaron Murray. And one to look out for is David Fales of San Jose State. This guy's got plenty of talent.
And what about, there's a University at Buffalo player, Khalil Mack, who shows up on your list of players to watch next year.
Mack is very intriguing. And, you know, there have been some reported off-field incidents, and I believe he was suspended at the beginning of last year. And if he keeps that all straight, he's a very talented player. He is used all along that formation. I believe they run three and four-man fronts, and he's usually a pass-rushing linebacker. But he's tough at the point of attack at the edge, can really get upfield, and he's got all the talent. And right now, that's really what you're looking for. And hopefully a lot of these guys can take the next step. And Mack is someone, and it really is, the Mack is taking over, I guess, the conference.
Yeah. I feel like somebody should walk into the studio and slap me for talking about next year's draft already.
Hey, I told you I took yesterday off, but this weekend I'll get right back to it.
Josh, thanks a lot. We will be talking with you, I'm sure. Thank you for coming on the air with us tonight to tie up some of the loose ends from the NFL draft this past weekend. Thanks.
Always enjoy joining you guys. Thanks a lot.
Josh Norris, the NFL draft writer for RotoWorld, a contributor for NFL.com, on the line with us. And, of course, the Bills' first pick in the draft, E.J. Manuel, the quarterback from Florida State. As you know by now, he was here in Orchard Park last Friday, meeting with some of the coaching staff, a lot of media work for him. He also took some time to sign some hats, some new era caps with the Buffalo Bills on it, logo on it, obviously. We have one autographed E.J. Manuel cap to give away. If you can answer this question correctly, the trivia question, the number to call if you know the answer is 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The first person to answer this correctly gets the E.J. Manuel autographed cap. Here's a question. This year, Manuel's school, Florida State, set a school record, for the number of players selected in the draft. How many Seminoles were picked in this year's draft? How many Florida State Seminoles were picked this year in the NFL draft? If you have the answer, we will take it on the phone line, 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. First correct answer gets an autographed E.J. Manuel cap. Again, 803-0550 is the number to call. Here's a call from Frank in Gettysville. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, John. You know, first of all, I want to say WGR, I don't think there's any other mid-sized city that covered the draft as better than WGR. So I wanted to say kudos to you guys.
Thank you. A lot of that is Joe Biscaglia, obviously.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention something I read in Wikipedia. And I think, first of all, Buddy's done a great job this year. And I read that, 2001, basically Buddy took over for, I think, Butler when he was in San Diego.
Oh, in San Diego. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and he drafted pretty much most of the players. And in 2007, he had 11 out of their 22 starters make the All-Pro team. And I was shocked by that figure because, I understand that people, draft some, have some good drafts, but I think people should realize we have a football genius as far as, somebody who's picking the draft here. And, I know Buddy's work is pretty much done now, but I wanted to say, I'm very happy that Buddy's our GM.
All right. Thanks, Frank. I don't know how Buddy would feel about being called a genius. He probably wouldn't fight you, but I think there might be some listeners who would. I like Buddy a lot. I think he's a good, solid football guy. He was there in San Diego, went to San Diego with John Butler and A.J. Smith. And when John Butler passed away, tragically, A.J. Smith became the general manager there in San Diego and kept Buddy Nix on the job up until just a couple of years ago until he came to Buffalo. And A.J.'s a good football man, too, by the way, a solid football man who knows what he's doing and built, along with John and Buddy Nix, a very good team out there in San Diego. I've always respected Buddy Nix's scouting acumen. I've always respected his ability to identify players. I have new respect this year for Buddy in the way, and I've talked about this a lot now, the way he manipulated the board this year. He got an extra pick in the second round, and he got a pick in the seventh round as well by flipping in the third with St. Louis. Those are moves that the first 3 years Buddy Nix did not make for whatever reason. I mean, he had been quoted, I guess, as saying that he kind of liked to stay where he was, and he certainly stood pat and took players as they came off the board in his first 3 years as GM. This year, the Bills were proactive, Buddy, and everyone else in the organization, right up to the highest levels. But it seemed to me they were proactive in identifying, who might be interested in this case, Tavon Austin, who was willing to give them what they want for Tavon Austin. And I understand the Rams started out offering a third rounder, and the Bills insisted it be a second rounder to move up that much, and they made the deal. And as you heard Buddy talk about during his interview with us in the first hour, they were able to stick it to the Jets, too, in the middle of that deal, too, because the Jets were interested in Tavon Austin. So there's a lot to like, I think, about the way this draft was managed by Buddy Nix in the football department here, not to mention the work that went into identifying the quarterback prospect. All that being said, do we know, is E.J. Manuel the guy? Is he a playoff-caliber quarterback? We don't know. I don't know. Buddy Nix doesn't know for certain. Listeners, we don't know. You just don't know. You hope that's the case. The Bills put an awful lot of work into it to identify Manuel as the quarterback that they wanted, but there's no guarantee in any of this. So very interesting draft. We have I believe, the correct answer for our trivia, John in Hamburg. How are you, John? You're on the air with us. Hello, John. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, so this year Florida State set a school record for the number of players selected in a draft. How many Florida State Seminoles were picked, John?
That would be 11.
How'd you know that?
Actually, I think I saw it on NFL Network recap.
All right, and there were how many in the first round? Do you know that? I'm sorry?
No, I do not.
Three in round one, but you got 11. That's the number we're looking for. John, thanks very much. Keep on hold. We'll get your information from you. You've got an autographed E.J. Manuel New Era cap coming your way. And we're going to open up phone lines again a little bit later on this hour. But we're going to take a break from the Bills for a few minutes and talk about the always interesting New York Jets who let Tim Tebow go today. We'll talk with Manish Mehta, who covers the Jets for the New York Daily News. When we return, we'll have some time for phone lines also a little bit later on this hour. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by Noco from One Bills Drive, keeping on top of the Bills news today, but there's news from downstate as well. The New York Jets, who released Tim Tebow today after one season there. On the line with us, a man who covers the Jets for the New York Daily News, Manish Mehta. Manish, you wrote today, the brief and bizarre Tim Tebow era is over. I think that sort of captures what went on down there over the last year, huh?
Yeah, it was surreal and ultimately unproductive. A lot of hype, of course. But look, this was a move that was highly anticipated. It was expected. And I think that if there wasn't turnover at the general manager position, that Mike Tannenbaum would have released Tim Tebow at the start of the new league year in March. And I think everybody, Tim Tebow's camp, the Jets, were fully aware that there was going to be a divorce at some point this offseason, and he was not going to be a part of their plans moving forward.
I guess that was the next question I had. Why today? I mean, Tebow really is not in a good position as far as finding an NFL job based on the timing of getting released today, is he?
No, he's not. New general manager John Idzik really exhausted every possibility to trade him. Now, the Jets did give him an opportunity to seek out some trade partners to facilitate a deal, but he ultimately couldn't find a team that was willing to take him on as a quarterback. I think there were some teams that explored the possibility of adding him if he was willing to change positions, maybe an H-back or a tight end, but he's always been reluctant to do that. He's always viewed himself as a quarterback, and I think that if he wants to carve out a niche in this league, he's going to have to come to terms with the fact that he's probably going to have to change positions. Of course, ultimately, he could play quarterback, perhaps in the CFL. The Montreal Alouettes own his rights, or retain his rights, I should say, or perhaps he could look into the Arena League. But I think if he's going to have some kind of future in the NFL, it's going to have to be at a position other than quarterback.
What do you think? Where would he fit for a team? What can he do for a team, as an H-back type or a tight end type?
Well, he can be a guy that can come in for a few plays here and there. He can run the ball. Everybody has seen that. But he is at his best when he's under center, and he gets to make the decision whether to pass or to throw, and that puts defenses off balance. But again, there aren't any teams in this league right now that are willing to do what the Broncos did a couple years ago, and that was only out of sheer desperation, which is to say, scrap the offense and let's tailor everything around Tim Tebow's skill set. There's a reason why players with Tebow's skill set don't thrive in the NFL. You have to be a more accurate passer. You have to be a little bit more conventional. I know that guys like Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick are maybe bucking the trend slightly, but those guys are still much more accurate and much more proficient passers than Tim Tebow. I just don't see any organization willing to do that for him.
And yet when the Broncos did that, Manish, they had a pretty significant playoff run that year when they redid everything for Tim Tebow. What do we make of that playoff run and that success that Tebow had with Denver?
I think most people in the league, if they're going to be honest with you, will tell you that they believe that was an aberration. And if you look at the games that Tim Tebow won for them, extremely low-scoring games that were pulled out in the fourth quarter by improvisation, and a little bit of help from the defense, a little bit of help sometimes from their kicker. So it was a magical run. It definitely captivated the NFL back in 2011. But the decision-makers in this league don't believe that that's sustainable, and that's obvious because there weren't many people willing to trade for Tebow when Denver was shopping him last year, and now there aren't any teams that were willing to trade with the Jets, even for a late-round pick, to get Tebow. And ultimately, that should tell you what the league thinks of his ability and of everything that happened in Denver. It was a great feel-good story, but ultimately, people around the league don't think that's sustainable over the long haul.
Manish, when Tebow arrived and there was that circus atmosphere that probably crested at training camp at Cortland last summer, could the Jets have tamped that down a little bit? Did they want to tamp it down, or did the Jets franchise enjoy that kind of attention?
I don't think they enjoyed the attention per se. I think they miscalculated how much attention there would be, and it seems silly to say that because anybody who knows anything about the NFL and about Tim Tebow realizes the enormous following that he has. But I really believe that Mike Tannenbaum and Rex Ryan, when they made this deal, thought that, hey, if you look at Tim Tebow in a vacuum, with the different skills that he has, he can provide a wildcat dimension that was missing after Brad Smith left. And as you guys know, Brad Smith really was a quintessential wildcat guy for the Jets, but he was used very limited and they figured that Tebow could fill that role without factoring in all the other chaos and madness and hysteria that comes with Tebow. Could they have, lightened the load a little bit, perhaps? But they I think they wanted to be as accommodating as they could to any media outlet that wanted to cover them in training camp. Obviously, ESPN was camped out there for the first few days, and that didn't help out matters either. So once it spun out of control, there was really not much the Jets could do. And, again, I think that was probably the biggest miscalculation when they were thinking about trading for Tim Tebow. I think they didn't weigh that enough, and ultimately it came back to bite them.
We're on the line with Manish Mehta, who covers the Jets for the New York Daily News. So let's turn the page to the future now, Manish. Coming off the draft and in round four, the Jets selected quarterback Geno Smith from West Virginia. Have they set themselves up for another, maybe smaller media circus around Geno Smith?
Well, I think it's a strange dynamic having Geno Smith and Mark Sanchez on the roster together. And the plan all along this offseason was to have Sanchez and David Garrard compete for the starting position. And I don't think that everybody in the Jets organization is sold on the fact that Geno Smith could be their franchise quarterback. Because if that was the case, if the new general manager truly believed that that was their guy, they would have taken him with one of those first two picks. They had the number 9 pick. They got the number 13 pick coming from Tampa Bay after the Darrelle Revis trade. They had two opportunities to draft Geno Smith. They ultimately passed on him, not knowing that he would be available for them at 39 in the second round. And at that point, they looked at it as a value pick. And I don't think you draft franchise quarterbacks because you think they're a value pick. I think at that point, the value was high enough for them to take him. But by selecting him, you create really another strange dynamic in the quarterback room, because Mark Sanchez, in all likelihood, isn't going anywhere anytime soon because of the guaranteed contract that he has. Ultimately, maybe John Idzik can convince Woody Johnson, the owner, to write an $8 million check to see Mark Sanchez walk out the door. At this point, the owner hasn't been willing to do that. So I think they may have boxed themselves in and created some unnecessary tension there by drafting a quarterback who admittedly is talented, but also flawed.
Yeah, and is anybody in the Jets organization willing to argue that Geno Smith could play this year, start and play this year?
Well, I think in an ideal world, that would be terrific for them. If they can get him up to speed this offseason, I just don't think that he is going to be ready by week one. There's a lot of work to be done coming from the offense that he ran at West Virginia to what Marty Morningwig wants to run with some of the West Coast offense elements in the Jets scheme this year. So it's a learning curve for any quarterback, even the most talented quarterbacks. And the other factor in all of this is that there isn't that great of a supporting cast around him. When Mark Sanchez was a rookie in 2009, he really leaned on one of the best offensive lines in football and rushing attacks in football to help them get through, and they ultimately snuck into the playoffs. Geno Smith doesn't have that around him. He's got a shaky offensive line, maybe one that's a little bit better after the draft, and not nearly as good of a running attack as Sanchez had when he was a rookie. So, and not to mention the fact that the wide receivers, as you guys know, are shaky at best in New York. So he doesn't have any very many weapons around him. That's going to compound the issues for Geno Smith as a rookie.
And Manish, it appears that they were not interested in adding too many weapons when you look at the way the Jets drafted, especially with their early picks last week.
Yeah, I think that a potential game-changing offensive playmaker needed to be high on that list. And in fairness to them, Tavon Austin was the guy that they were going to draft at number 9 before the Bills traded with the Rams. And obviously the Rams jumped over the Jets to take Tavon Austin. But short of that, they didn't address it with the 13th overall pick. They obviously didn't do it in the second round because they took Geno Smith. In the third round, they went with an offensive lineman. So that's a glaring hole. I mean, right now, when you look at the wide receiving core, the tight end group, you've got Santonio Holmes, who's coming off a Liz Frank injury. You don't know if he's going to be ready by week one. He certainly will be limited in training camp. You've got Stephen Hill, who was shaky as a rookie. He's a second-year player. You don't know what you're going to get out of him. You think he could be good, but how quickly will he be able to make a difference? And you got Jeremy Curley, who's probably their most solid wide receiver. But, he's not a game changer. They lost Dustin Keller in free agency, so now they've got Jeff Cumberland as their number one tight end. So the pass-catching options for the quarterback are limited, and it's going to be difficult for this team to put up points. I think the defense will be better, but ultimately in this league in 2013, you need to generate points, and I don't know how the Jets are going to be able to do that.
Hey, Manish, I got the sense around here last week that you know, the Bills love the trade down that they made with St. Louis. They like getting the extra second rounder. They got their quarterback in E.J. Manuel, and they didn't mind thwarting the New York Jets' efforts to get Tavon Austin. That was kind of a maybe unintended positive consequence of that.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario, how kind of how that played out, because the Rams' offensive coordinator is Brian Schottenheimer, who used to be Rex Ryan's former coordinator before there was a mutual parting of the ways. In reality, he was fired. So I'm sure Brian Schottenheimer was pretty happy with that. And as you touched on, in terms of the AFC East, the Bills, you know, keep Tavon Austin out of the division. Let's see how that plays out over the next few years. But it certainly looks like, you know, the Bills got their man at the quarterback position by trading down and kept the Jets from getting you know, potential difference maker on offense.
And yet the Jets got to be happy with Milliner, the cornerback they got in the first round. If that's a consolation prize, that's a really good consolation prize for him, isn't it?
Absolutely. They had him highly rated. They didn't think he was going to slip to nine. I know that Milliner didn't think that he was going to slip to nine as well, but obviously some of those physical concerns, health concerns that surfaced a week or so ago maybe pushed him a little further down in that first round. But look, I think he's the only clear-cut starter that the Jets got out of this draft. Potentially, they've got a defensive tackle in Sheldon Richardson out of Missouri who could make a difference. I think he'll be eased in and be part of that defensive line rotation. But he could be a good player. And Brian Winters, a tackle at Kent State who's going to be vying for a starting position at guard, could be a guy that they could plug in. But I think when you look at the draft results right now, a couple of days after it's over, there's only one clear-cut guy that you can, you know, write in the starting lineup with Penn, and that's D. Milliner.
Last thing, Manish, the Bills and the Jets split their regular season series last year. They're sort of at the bottom looking up at the Dolphins and the Patriots now. How do you think this is going to sort out this year? I mean, we're getting a better sense now of what these rosters will look like for these two teams. And is the arrow pointing up for either one of these franchises, in your opinion?
Well, it's a fresh start in Buffalo. And when you have a whole new coaching staff, there's always optimism. And I know the Jets are pretty confident that the Bills are going to have a good defense because they're familiar with Mike Pettine and you know what he brings to the table. Pettine really called all the defensive plays in the second half of last season, or early in the season. Rex Ryan called third downs, but Pettine still called those first two downs. So the Jets know that the Bills are going to have an improved defense. As far as the offense goes, it's an unknown, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it a lot, so you don't really know what you're going to get. As far as the Jets go, I don't think they're going to be contending for a playoff spot. They were 6-10 a year ago. I think they'll probably be a 4 or 5 win team this year. They really gutted their roster, and they're starting from scratch. You know, you're not going to get anybody in that organization to tell you publicly that this year is a wash, but I think that ultimately what John Idzik wants to do is to build a team. It's going to take 2 or 3 years, really make a push for 2014 to be a viable playoff contender. I don't think they're going anywhere this season.
It's going to be interesting. We know that. Manish, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight.
All right. Thanks, John.
Manish Mehta covers the Jets for the New York Daily News. He wrote today, "The brief and bizarre Tim Tebow era is over for the New York Jets." Interesting stuff down there. All right, we'll take a break, come back, get to your phone calls. The lines are open for your comments and questions. 803-0550, the number to call toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A couple of minutes left in the show. Time for your phone calls. We were talking earlier tonight about the last 5 days for the Bills, the draft, the trade down right before the draft. 16 college free agents signed today. The trade for Jerry Hughes today. Which Bills move over the last 5 days is your favorite move? Which is the best move? Which is the worst move they've made over the last 5 days? Give us a call, 803-0550, the number toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can always follow us on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. And, you know, if you'd like to review what's gone on over the last few days, the best place to do that is BuffaloBills.com. All kinds of Bills information, a complete list of the 16 college free agents signed today with a capsule summary of what they bring to the Bills, press conferences. There's a nice photo section on E.J. Manuel and his day in One Bills Drive last Friday. All of it available at BuffaloBills.com. If you miss portions of our show, you can go to BuffaloBills.com/John Murphy Show. You can download the mobile Bills app at BuffaloBills.com, and you can always subscribe to us on iTunes. That's the place to go for all of your Bills information. Speaking of the draft, and we have been speaking about it, ESPN released a statement today about the ratings for the draft, including the first two nights from primetime, Thursday and Friday, increases in both ratings and viewership over last year. ESPN says their ratings went up 3% from last year and 6% from 2 years ago. The top 10 markets for ESPN's coverage of the draft: New Orleans, number one, Birmingham, Alabama, number two, Kansas City, number three, and then Buffalo. Fourth highest rated television ratings for NFL draft coverage in Buffalo, New York. We did some decent draft coverage ourselves right here on the radio show last Friday. Let's squeeze in some phone calls before the top of the hour. Ken in the Bronx. Ken, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Okay.
I think the best move, like everybody's hitting on that, is that trading down and getting two picks, an extra pick in the second and the seventh pick. I think that was the move. And I'm just a little scared with all the speed now that, you know, that we can't still stop the run. Other than that, I think the draft was fine. Thank you, John.
Okay, thanks, Ken. Thanks for participating. Here is Mark on the Thruway. Mark, good evening. You're on the air with us tonight.
I have a scenario question for you. Say if E.J. Manuel has a mediocre year, shows a little signs of improvement, but has a year like Tannehill or Whedon, and then say we bottom out and we get the number one draft pick for the following year, and all signs still lead to Jevon Clowney looking like the number one overall, but Teddy Bridgewater still looks like the overall number one quarterback, say about as good as like Luck or Griffin was. Do the Bills go for a Bridgewater or do they go for Clowney?
That's a very good question. That's an outstanding question. A lot of there's a lot of ifs there, you know, CJ. You know, I mean, there's a lot of contingencies there. Like if and some of those contingencies, I don't think any of us want to see happen as far as bottoming out, but. You know, there are better quarterback prospects in next year's draft than there were this past weekend. There's no question about that. And the Bills, I don't think they're even can begin to start answering that question about what they do in quarterback at next year's draft. CJ in West Seneca, you're on the air. Hi, CJ.
Hey, Murph. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good.
Good. Yeah, so, Murph, I mean, I really can't hold, you know, it against the Bills that they got Manuel at 16. They got the guy that they ultimately wanted. The only thing I can honestly say that I really wasn't happy with was that we don't, you know, we'll never know if Manuel could have dropped to the second round or not.
No, you won't.
But with the glaring need of linebacker that we had a great shot of getting those two linebackers from Georgia, either Jarvis Jones or Ogletree. And, you know, I ultimately think this draft will be a great draft if we can end up signing Carlos Dansby because he'll make up for the glaring need of linebacker that we have. But, you know, if we don't end up getting him, you know, we had a great spot to get a really good linebacker to plug in right away at the number one spot.
Yeah, well, you're right. We will never know how long Manuel would have lasted. I think a lot of people believe that the Eagles, for one, were interested. I don't know that Dansby is an option anymore. In fact, Buddy Nix was asked about it Saturday, and he indicated that, you know, they're not closing the door. But I think in their minds, they think Kiko Alonso, the rookie who came with the second pick in the second round out of Oregon, I think they view him as the guy that they want to plug in there and play. And Buddy specifically said they have not given up on Carlos Dansby, but I don't think that that's preeminent in their plans right now. They couldn't get a deal done with him. Rob in Charlotte, you're on the air. Rob, hello.
John.
How are you?
I just wanted to talk about real quickly the so-called draft experts, McShay and all the other guys. I was kind of taken back, to be honest with you, John, when the initial pick came out and the next day McShay came out and basically blatantly said that it was a bad pick.
Yeah, he's still saying it tonight, by the way. I caught him on ESPN tonight. He's still saying it.
He didn't come off of it. Yeah, absolutely. He didn't come off of it later today. I heard him on the way home. My thing is that, like the last caller kind of alluded to, there's no guarantee that that EJ was going to be there at 41. I feel like you had said and you opened the show and talked about how extensive they were and how exhaustive they were with this search for a quarterback. I feel confident is really how I feel as a Buffalo Bills fan that they took this guy at 16 at a value where they thought that I really look at him as a future type of Cam Newton without the ego problems. And I wanted you to just kind of talk to that because the physical, all the intangibles are off the chart. It may be just a situation where he needs to wait a little while, and I feel like Kevin Call actually presents that opportunity for him to do that.
Yeah.
And I honestly, as a Bills fan, I think he's a little bit, Kevin Call in my book, so just a little bit better than Fitzpatrick, and I'll be honest with you.
All right, thanks, Rob. Good questions. You know, we talked with Buddy earlier tonight. The one question that I had written on paper that I did not ask him, quite frankly, because we were running out of time, was, would you have been as comfortable drafting E.J. Manuel if you did not have Kevin Cobb? Because maybe I'll ask that question to Buddy some other time, because I think Kevin Cobb gives them a little bit of a cushion so that they can afford to take a guy with big upside like E.J. Manuel that might not be ready on opening day, September 8th, to play against the Patriots. And I wondered if Kevin Cobb gives them that luxury. But you're right about the draft experts. You know, they need something to rail against. And many of them, McShay most prominently, I guess, have chosen the selection of E.J. Manuel as, the one big mistake. And they don't know how it's going to turn out. Neither do the Bills. Neither does Buddy Nix. We're going to pay attention and see what happens to it. Thanks very much for your call. We're back here tomorrow night. Robert Woods, second round draft pick, scheduled to join us on the show tomorrow night. Make sure you stick around for that tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on the radio. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Pete Cargis, our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, the Bills director of broadcasting, my boss, Jeff Matthews. We're back tomorrow at 7, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.